That's why. Going to high school, I played tennis, and you know, it was a big part of my life. It was something that I was good at. School to me just wasn't important. You know, I didn't care about school. I never tried in school. I just thought it was stupid, and I wanted to fit in, so I thought being cool was not caring about school and, you know, doing sports and all that stuff. Well, my first drink is when all of that changed, my whole perception and outlook. I had my first drink when I was 14 years old. And growing up, I grew up with alcohol, like around alcohol all the time. My father also suffers from this disease. His father did as well. And my dad is one of five, and they're all alcoholics and addicts. So the gene runs very strong in my family. My first drink, I was with my brother. I was 14. It was summer going into high school. And like I said, I've always been around it, and everybody who would drink it, like, we'd always have parties at my house, and, you know, it always looked fun. It just looked appealing, just the drinking. Like, it just looked appealing. Everybody, like, everyone was happy. Everybody was nice. And I was very curious. So my brother, he's 4 years older than me, so I mean, he should have known better this time. He was just graduating high school, but he offered me a drink. And I took it out of curiosity, and it was gin. I don't think I've drank in gin since that night, honestly. But it was fun. Honestly, I had a blast. I was basically by myself because my brother, I got so annoying, my brother and his friends wouldn't let me in the room. So I was like basically by myself, and I was the biggest drunk dialer. Like, I would just drunk dial my friends and be like, oh, look, you know, I'm 14. I call my friends like, I'm drunk. And like, they thought it was so cool. And it was a really good experience. But towards the end of the night, you know, my head was in the toilet. You know, I got extremely sick. But I remember waking up next morning, and I absolutely loved it. Just the feeling it gave me was just this release and something I've never experienced before. My drinking started to become progressive throughout high school. At first, it was just fun. I had a good time, you know. For some reason, I don't know why, but I was obsessed with all the older kids. You know, I was a freshman, sophomore in high school, and I hung out with all seniors. And it became to the point where I felt like tennis and really the priorities that should have been my priorities just weren't important to me anymore. So I quit tennis because, you know, it got in the way of my drinking and my partying. And another thing, like, I wasn't, like, number one on the tennis team, but I thought drinking is something I can be the best at. I had this name in high school of just, like, the party girl. That's really what I was known for. And I lived up to that name because it made me stand out. I felt like it just made me somebody. You know, and like you have senior superlatives in high school, like, I don't know, best dress, most courteous. I got most likely to stay in Lexington. That was my senior superlative. That's probably the worst superlative, but that's what I got. And I was like, okay, you know, that's me. That's just, but inside, y'all, I was dying. You know, this was not who I wanted to be, you know, but it's just this front, and just alcohol, all I do, it just covered it up for me. And, you know, I just always seemed like the outgoing, like, party girl. Yeah, let's have fun. I was always the one that someone would call to know where a party was at, when deep down, that's not what I wanted. I didn't want that. And also, you know, growing up, my mom was a Sunday school teacher. So we had to go to church every Sunday night, and I mean, Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday. So it was forced upon me. Religion was forced upon me, and I didn't like it. You know, just, I think, you know, just like someone who doesn't want to get sober, you know, you can put the big book in their face and tell them your experience and how great it is. No one wants to hear that if they're not ready, and I wasn't ready with my walk with God then. So, yeah, that's how, you know, church was for me. And my mom for so long pushed it on me, and she was such an amazing woman. I put her through so much pain and so much stress, and God bless her. So I graduated high school. My grades were terrible. I couldn't get into any college. And I'm sitting here, and all my friends are going away to college. And here I am, stuck in Lexington, living at home with my parents. And it's like it all caught up to me, you know? Like I said, at first, the drinking, it was fun. And then it just didn't work for me anymore. It didn't. And I wish I could stand here and tell y'all some funny, crazy stories, but I was a blackout drinker. I don't remember half of the stuff I did. All I remember, most of my experience was, you know, drinking, And waking up the next morning and being, oh my God, what did I do? I always had somebody mad at me. You know, I hate that feeling. Well, I hate when you like wake up the next morning and you ask them like, what happened last night? What I, that's the worst feeling. And then they tell you, and it's just like, it's just awful. It's something I do not miss that at all. So yeah, all my friends, they go off to college, and I was pretty miserable at this point. And my mom and I, we did not get along at all in high school. You know, I was just crazy, and she was this amazing woman, and she was basically raising me alone because my father, he's a hard worker, and he was gone a lot during my high school. He traveled a lot. We lived in Lexington, South Carolina, and he actually lived in Myrtle Beach a good bit of my high school year, so he wasn't there a lot. So it was just my mom, and my brother was off at college, and her and I just butt heads constantly, constantly. And I put her through so much pain, and I just remember the times that she would just cry and lock herself in her room and just put the alcohol. I didn't care. I was young. I didn't care. You know, it was all about what I wanted in that moment. You're not going to stop me. No one's going to stop me. And then the day that honestly changed my life forever, my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 cervical cancer about a couple months after I graduated high school. And that news, it rocked my world. It was very progressive. I can't even tell you how many rounds of chemo or radiation. It was just a constant struggle. And you know what? It's something that I still work on this, but I beat myself up. You know, not once did I ever take her to chemotherapy. I never drove her. I never sat there with her and held her hand. I wasn't the daughter that I should have been during those times, and that's really hard for me because I know that she would have dropped anything in a second, but I'm telling you, that's what this disease did to me. It shut off everything that I was supposed to care about, and I should have cared about, and I didn't. You know, it's all about me. It's all about what I wanted, and a big thing that I struggle with is woe is me. I'm a victim. Everything happens to me. It's your fault. I don't have a part in anything. I'm a victim. You know, I expect everything out of everybody else. And when my mom was diagnosed with cancer, you know, this is just when I just flew off the handle because, you know, it's all about me. So my drinking progressed. It got worse and worse. It got to the point where I couldn't keep jobs. I was hardly going to school. And I don't know what changed. I don't know what happened, but something in my heart just changed. And just seeing how my mom was fighting for her life with this cancer, I knew it was time for me to get myself together because I knew she didn't have a lot of time. So it's time for me to get it together and to be the daughter that I should be, and not only for her, but just for myself. Because, you know, we're not meant to be on this earth just to be drunken idiots and ruin people's lives and ruin our lives. And when walking around in this life without a purpose, that is the absolute worst feeling. You know, it's like we're just walking around aimlessly, having no destination, and that's miserable. That's not living, and that's what I did for years. So I remember I went into my living room, my parents were sitting down, and I just broke down to them, and they knew, and they were ready, and I was ready, and I told them I need help. So within a week, I came here to Ridgeview, and yeah, everything was going well. I also have a dual addiction. I have an eating disorder as well. So I came in there with, you know, my eating disorder and alcoholism, and everything was fine. You know, the first couple days of Ridgeview, it's kind of like a vacation. You know, the world shut off. It really is like you don't have your phone, you don't have a computer, the world shut off. It's all about me. It's like therapy. And I walked into a meeting one night. I probably had about 2 weeks sober, and there was this really cute guy. And I was like, all right, this is it. This is why I was supposed to come to rehab, to meet this guy. So anyways, from that point on, I was distracted by this one guy. And him and I started talking while I was in Ridgeview. So I was like, Jesus, I didn't have a chance. You know, and at this point, I was so vulnerable. You know, it's the first time in a long time that the alcohol is taken away from me. You know, the eating disorder is taken away from me. And when you're by yourself, it's just like, God, just give me something. I don't want to feel like this anymore. So seeing this guy was just like, okay, because I wasn't willing at this point. So yes, we got into a relationship. I was very early into recovery, very early. I moved out. I went to a three-quarter home, and I basically just shot the shit, seriously. I stuck around with some girls who weren't serious at all about this program, and it was all about how we can break the rules. I would come to meetings just to make appearances, you know, just to look all cute and just show up. And, you know, I had a sponsor who I never called. And I had a sponsor just to say I had a sponsor. And during this time, my mom's cancer got progressively worse. I was living here at the time. And, you know, my family's in South Carolina. So I traveled home as much as I could. I had a job, so I would go home every weekend. And literally, it's like every weekend that I went home, like she was just deteriorating before my eyes. She got thinner and thinner, and she started losing her hair. And, you know, it's so hard to stand up here and talk about her. I wish every single one of you could have just met her, and you just know what I'm feeling. Like, she was an amazing person. And through her struggle, like, it got to the point where she couldn't use her right leg, so she had to be bedridden. And through all this pain, she never once questioned God. Never once. She had this faith that was unshakable. And I would look at her, and I'm like, I just don't get it, Mom. I don't get it. Because I didn't have that. To me, this is an absolute tragedy, and nothing good will come out of this. But she was such a strong woman of God, and it never once, you know, she was all about, this is God's plan, this isn't mine. This is God's plan. So I thank God for that, you know, that time that I was sober. You know, I was able to come home. We would lay in bed a lot and watch, her favorite show was Cake Boss, so we'd go home and watch Cake Boss. And I thank God for these moments. And during all this time, I managed to have a year and a half of sobriety. And I just need to tell y'all, that year and a half was the worst year and a half of my life. And that includes the drinking and everything. I mean, I wasn't even, it was sobriety. Like, seriously, I was not sober at all. I mean, it was just terrible. I didn't work a program. You know, I relied on my friends. I relied on my boyfriend. I relied on this hope of my mother that she was going to make this. You know, not God never questioned my mind. Because, you know what, I got angry at God. Like, how dare you take away this woman out of my life, this my mother? It didn't make sense. And, you know, I don't know. So January 20th, 2012, that's when she took her last breath. And that's when my mom died, January 20th, 2012. And I remember it was 2 days later, I was at her funeral, and I was standing outside of her burial. And I'm not trying to be morbid, but it's just as good as I can explain it. I was just, you know, standing there and watching my mom, you know, they were taking her into the ground, watching the woman who gave me birth. She loved me unconditionally, no matter how much pain I caused her. You know, all the tears, the heartbreak, you know, guys, she never once questioned me. Never once questioned me. She always believed in me, always believed in me, even when I was a mess. And I just watched that go into the ground, and it's like, that was it. You know, I don't know if any of y'all have experienced death, but it sucks, and it's hard, and it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. So, I had about a year and a half, and the guy that I was dating broke up with me shortly after her death, too. So it's just like all these things that I were depending on just were stripped away from me, and I was just like left with nothing, and I wanted to die. You know, I didn't have a program to fall back onto. I didn't have a relationship with God. I didn't have those things because I didn't work for him. You know, it's all about me and my will. Like, I thought, you know, the boyfriend or all the friends or the job or the clothes, all that was going to make me happy, and that's not how it works. That's not life. So I relapsed shortly after that. You know, I was living here, and I just said, screw it. So I moved back home to South Carolina. Like I said, my father is also, he's very sick. And it was probably the worst, you know, position I could put myself in. And it got, you know, I remember thinking, okay, it's been a year and a half since I drank. You know, whew, I'm going to start over clean. It's going to be good this time, you know? You know, so that was my mindset. And it was so weird because the first couple times that I drank, I was okay. You know, I was coherent. You know, I was, like, having a good time. And then, y'all, it's so funny because, bam, I was, like, back on my ass. And it just shows that this disease doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. Even if we're sober, it's like it's still stewing in us. But as long as we do the work and work this program, you know, we can shut that up. But God, mine was stronger than ever. It was just waiting. And, you know, like I think we've all had, you know, experiences where we're like, okay, well, I'm just going to get a little buzzed, or I'm just going to stick to beer tonight. You know, I'm going to be the DD, so I can't drink. There's no way. I have lives in my hand. But none of that, it never worked. Never. You know? And I think, you know, while I was in sobriety, you know, when I had that year and a half, I just always had these thoughts, well, I think maybe I was just too young, you know. I'm 19, you know, I think, you know, my mom was really sick. I just think the circumstances just made me this way. And, you know, as unfortunate as it was for me to relapse, I am so grateful for it because I now know without a doubt I am an alcoholic. And... you know, God, I was only out for like 4 or 5 months, and it was miserable. You know, I was just living at my dad's. You know, him and I were drinking together, and I don't know. It's like I woke up this one morning, and I felt like I could just feel my mom. I could just feel her sadness for me, and like, how dare I live this way after how hard she fought? You know, I was just like wasting my life away. And I don't know why bad things happen in life. I wish I could explain it. I don't understand why, you know, things aren't fair, but, you know, life still happens whether we like it or not. And I miss my mom every single day. You know, not a day goes by that I don't think of her, and it doesn't break my heart. But I'm so grateful for it because I truly believe that her death led me to God. It really did. He just would speak through her, and just her love and her character and her unfailing faith just showed me that there is really a God. And that's what I believe. You know, I used to think nothing good will come out of this, but I believe that she led me to God. And by the grace of God, I came back into the rooms. It's funny because, you know, I just think with me relapsing, all this stuff, you know, I went back to Ridgeview, and I just had all this guilt and all the shame. You know, I'm 21 years old. I'm back in rehab. You know, it sucked. I was in there for about 2 months, and I, you know, was continuing just to do stupid stuff. I was talking to boys. I actually got kicked out for talking to a boy. You know, it's just the same thing, and I just realized, oh my, this is not working for me. My will is not working at all. It never has. So I don't know what happened, but I remember I got kicked out of Ridgeview. My dad was like, done. And, you know, my dad, although he suffers from this disease, it doesn't mean we're bad people. My dad's a wonderful father, absolute wonderful father, and he would help me, just no questions asked. And, you know, me, usually I would get everything handed to me, whether it's money, whether it's anything. My dad, I had no worries. My dad took care of everything. But after I got kicked out of Ridgeview, he's like, I'm done. He came up there, brought me some clothes and brought me a couple $100s, but then he showed me the check that he had to pay for Ridgeview. And he said, and I, when I saw that check, I was sick to my stomach, absolutely sick to my stomach. And I got to the point where I'm willing for a different life. I'm willing to do something new. And by the grace of God, I got into a three-quarter house called Lifeline, and that place is absolutely wonderful. You know, it's an adjustment. I feel like with my pride, you know, I'm almost an adult. I don't need to listen to rules. You know, it's living with 6 other women was terrible at first. But God's hand was in it because I got these relationships with these women that I've never had before. And I don't know about y'all, but for me, like drinking and, you know, partying, having fun, yeah, you meet people and it's all fun and dandy. But God, when you're sober, when you're in the right state of mind, you truly meet genuine people, genuine friends that care about you and you care about them. And I think that is also a benefit from this program. You know, all these people here tonight, a bunch of them are here supporting me, and I'm forever grateful for that. So yes, what I did was I got a sponsor immediately. And I always say, she hates when I cry, but she's literally a gift from God. You know, before when I was sober, I went through maybe four different sponsors, you know, I just wasn't willing. And I didn't want to call every day because when I called, it was the same thing. I just felt obligated to call. I didn't, you know, feel a connection or anything. But that was my part. I was just not willing at all. And going this time, I was willing. And I found her. And she has experienced a lot of the same things that I've experienced. She's also lost her parents, so she knows how it feels. So to sit with someone and to look in their eyes and know that they felt the same pain that I feel, it's an amazing experience. It really is. I've been with her since day one, and we went through the steps. I'll tell you, the biggest thing for me was my fourth step. Before I just wrote down just some names and some people that I were pissed at. You know, I was just pissed at them, you know. And then when I did my fourth step with Caitlin, we'd go to a person and she'd be like, okay, now what's your part? Excuse me? I don't have a part. You know, like I'm a victim. It's all about me, life, you know. God took away my mom. You know, I never could win a freaking pageant, or I sucked in school, you know. It's like all these, like with school, you know, I wasn't good at tennis. God, it's all these lies that I've told myself. And I've been driven on these lies for my whole life, you know. I'm sure I'm very smart. I mean, I believe I'm smart. I haven't gone to school yet, but I think I'm intelligent. But, you know, just I believe the alcohol, just the alcohol in itself, it's all a lie. Guys, it's all a lie. So therefore, everything else in my life was a lie. Where was I going with that? Four step. Thank you. So I did my four step, and we had to do my part, which baffled me. I had no idea I even had a part. But we sat down, and when I went through these resentments, and you know what? It's true. No matter. You know, like I said, things happen and it doesn't make sense. Sometimes things happen where it's absolutely out of our control, but there's always a part. And when I realized that I had a part and I owned it, I can't explain this peace that I had. It was absolutely this overwhelming sense of peace. And so like going through the steps, you know, doing my fifth step, being completely honest with somebody was hard for me. So, I mean, I am a liar. I'm so manipulative, you know. I feel like it gets scary because I would, you know, tell a lie and I knew it was a lie, but then, God, I was so good at it, I just started believing myself, you know, and it was just a lie on top of lie on top of lie. And I'm not kidding. Like, someone asked what I had for lunch, and I really had like a turkey sandwich, and I said I had like fruit just to make myself sound better, and just things like that, you know. It's scary. It's like silly, yeah, and I laugh about it, but like, God, that's ridiculous. Because it's all about how I want y'all to perceive me as. I want to be perfect. And I want y'all to think that I'm perfect. So, I'm not perfect. I know that now. And I, you know, it's something I'm still working on, is being completely honest. It's very hard for me to be honest. But, you know, whether it's just telling somebody how I feel, or whether it's just sticking up for myself when I don't want to, and, you know, integrity, just doing something I don't want to do. You know, but doing that, I believe it has built my character. And let's see. Oh, and another big thing for me going through this was making my amends. You know, my home group this past Tuesday, it was 2 weeks ago, we were talking about our amends, and I went up there, and, you know, it's so true. Like, I wrote down my amends, and, like, here's a list. You know, I wrote down all the people that I know I make amends to, and here's, it's a group of yeses, a group of maybes, and a group of absolutely not, not willing to do those, you know. But I believe that the ones that I absolutely did not want to do, those were my biggest ones. For example, my biggest amend that I needed to make was to my mother, you know, and like in the big book says, if you absolutely cannot make direct amends, then write a letter. So that's what I did, was I wrote a letter to her. I have not been back to my grave since my mom, sorry y'all. I've not been back to my mom's grave since she died. It's just been a really big fear of mine. It's been really hard for me to accept it. And I wrote this letter to her and just put it all out there. And I drove up there, and it was all the way in South Carolina. I was there one weekend, and I walked up to her grave, and it was just this amazing experience. I stood in front of her grave, and I just read my mom this letter. And I literally felt like the hand of God on me, this feeling I've never felt before. And it's just this peace I got from it. And I remember I was walking away, and I think I could hear my mom say, it's okay. It's okay. But I would have not been able to have that experience if it were not for this program. This program it's just taught me so much, and I hear a lot, it's a selfish program, but God, I believe it's made me very selfless. Like I said, I'm not perfect, but I think more of others, I acknowledge other people's needs and their wants, and I have in-depth conversations, and I have true friendships, and that's something I've never had before. And it's just, this disease, it's very scary. Like I said, my dad's dad was an alcoholic and an addict, and it was about last year, right before I came into treatment. He's 80 years old, has five sons, he has grandchildren, and he shot himself in his house, which I'm not trying to sound morbid. I was never really close to him, but God, can you imagine, you're 80 years old, you just pissed away your life because of this disease and this addiction, 80 years old. And to me, that, I thank you, God, that I'm here today and that y'all are here, because, that could have been any of us. We are here by the grace of God. We really are, and it's not like we woke up one morning, we were just I want to be an alcoholic or I want to be an addict. Just things happen. But it is a gift to be here, and I'm just forever, forever grateful for that. And it's unfortunate, my dad still suffers from this disease, and it's hard, it's really hard to see him like that. And, you just want to, with someone who else is struggling with this, you just want to shake him so bad, because you have the solution. You have it, and you just want to give it to them. And I get pissed, because I pray every day for my father. I pray every day for all kinds of circumstances. And you know what? Some of them, they just haven't changed. You know, that's okay, because what I've come to realize is my God is bigger than me. He's bigger than any problem, and he's bigger than any plan that I could ever imagine. And through this program, with my mom's death, and through this program, it's just like, God is just, I've found God. I've found him to where I had no conception of God when I was back out, and it was absolutely miserable. Like I said, I had no purpose in life. But coming into this program, I've found God, and I have this faith. And, something big for me is what's also been hard is taking action. I can sit there and pray all day about what I want to happen and what I want to change, but nothing is going to happen if I do not take action. I heard this saying or story one time, and I thought it was kind of funny. But there's this man, and he has the keys. He's holding the keys to his car. And he keeps saying, I believe if I get in my car, I can drive from point A to point B. I know I can get from point A to point B. I believe my car can do that. But if you do not open the door and get in the car and drive away, you're not going to get to point B. Do you see what I mean? This program is all about taking action. And there's integrity, just doing things that you don't want to do. I just celebrated the year, thank God, by the grace of God. But my life is in no means perfect. I struggle daily on stuff. I think everybody in here who knows me knows that. I struggle daily with jobs, with relationships. Financially, I spend way too much money on clothes. I'm not kidding, Starbucks is killing me right now. I'm not perfect whatsoever. But it's just I'm here. you know, I'm standing right here today speaking with you. Like, God has always taken care of me, always. You know, and as long as I have that faith in him, and I believe if I just keep doing the next right thing, and if I keep, you know, showing up where I need to show up in friendships or relationships, and if I'm honest, just doing the next right thing, God's going to meet, he always meets me in the middle. He always does. You know, no, it's not necessarily always on my timing. That's another thing I've had a really hard time with God is because, you know, it's not like you can pick up the phone, like, God, I need you to give me this answer, like, right now. I need help. You know, it's I don't get that direct answer. But, you know, that's why, you know, I tend to seek out to, you know, relationships or clothes or anything just that will fix me temporarily. But what I've learned is it's God's timing. It's not my timing. But, oh, my God, when it does come around, it is so much better than what I could have ever imagined. You know, honestly, guys, that's I really don't have that much else to say. I just want to say that it's an honor to be up here and speak with y'all. Thank you for letting me be here. And I just want to say that there is hope. You know, I know each of us go through our own individual struggles, but there's hope. And through this program, you know, doing the 12 steps thoroughly, you know, calling your sponsor. I know these little tedious things like, you know, call me every day or, you know, go to meetings like these. It works if you work it. I hate that because it's a gay and cliche, but it's so true. It works if you work it. And I think everything else will fall into place. But thank you for letting me be here tonight.